guys, welcome to Vaudeville. It's been a while, I know, but today we have a very special guest. I am here with
Marco Garcia.
Yeah.
I'm a researcher at the University of Houston, an undergraduate student there, and I also do environmental work as an activist.
Yay! Like I know Marco for a while now. He's a very good researcher. And I'm just so excited to dive into the topic. So, Marco, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, so today we're talking about my article on my newsletter. It's called The Local Costs of Global Plastic Production. The basic gist of the article is about this company called LyondellBasell. It's a major petrochemical manufacturing company. And so the article is sort of centered around that, but it's sort of meant to get readers to sort of think about the local costs of this giant industry that's affecting the world, right, on a global scale.
That's amazing. That's a topic we need to immediately talk about. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. So I read the article, and I think it's an amazing article, well written. It really brings out all the discussions that need to be said. But like to start from scratch, what like motivated you to do research on LyondellBasell, or more or less focus on LyondellBasell, for this article?
Yeah, there's a few reasons. So I think there's not one like primary reason. It's sort of like a perfect storm of several factors. So creatively, I think, and this is probably a minor factor in this, is a creative impulse to just write something about, you know, the environmental issues that are facing not just the world, but specifically here in Houston, where I'm located. And so I had spent a lot of time sort of reflecting on a few months, or really the second half of 2021, really just thinking about the question of, okay, like, you know, how do we, you know, affect change on environmental issues? And so creatively, I was just thinking, I have to do whatever it is that the answer to that question is, I have to do something, right? And so it was just, this was really just what I knew I could do, which is, I don't mean to like get, you know, too, I guess, philosophical, but that it's, so there's a creative impulse to this. So, but that's one factor. The other factor is obviously that, that this issue is pressing. So like back in late last year, there was the Glasgow climate summit. And so these issues have already sort of been, so that if you don't know the Glasgow summit, most of the nations came to an agreement on certain things about climate change, about environmental action. And obviously one of the main things in that was climate change and the thing which, you know, creates that. So greenhouse gas emissions, and that's tied into the fossil fuel industry and the petrochemical industry. So there's that reason as well. It's just that, and I sort of try to highlight this in the article at the beginning and try to why we should be talking about this in the first place. And because, you know, as a Houstonian, I have a huge part to play in this problem, in this vast like global problem of plastic production, but also, you know, other environmental issues I sort of mentioned in the article.
That's like really fascinating, because, you know, I also in a sense I'm from Houston, and I just imagine Houston to be a very industrial city. I mean, like the way, the whole idea of like emissions and waste are like kind of like looked aside in a sense. That's why we have constant, sometimes you see like when you look at the weather, they're like, oh, the air is not good today. And I'm like, oh well, that's basic Houston. Not really that we have smog, but we just have contaminated air once in a while on the weather app. Well, all the time it seems, but like the weather is just like, okay, you know, if you have heart breathing problem or respiratory problem, you should be aware that this is going to happen today. And, you know, I've never heard of LyondellBasell before. I didn't know what they did, in a sense. But like, you know, kind of like made me question, like, you know, why them, in a sense, like, why not any other plastic company? Why them specifically? Like, do they have?
Yeah, I should add to you. I forgot to mention right now in the first question about, you know, why I decided to write this article. And when I was feeling that sort of like that I wanted to write an article about something in Houston, I really just looked at the newspaper, like the newspapers that I had accumulated throughout this past school year, because so I get like the physical copy of my city paper. I was just going through it, and I was just thinking, like, what's a story here that I want to focus on? And I came across this explosion that had happened back in July, which was at this Lyondell, one of Lyondell Bastle's facilities. And it sort of struck me that I hadn't actually, either I had heard of it and forgot about it, or I just didn't hear about it. And it was sort of, and I caught the, I didn't get the, I didn't read the paper of the news article of the facility explosion itself, but of the autopsy report. So what happened to the people who suffered through the explosion? It was an acid leak. So they're, as I mentioned in the article, they're a petrochemical refining company. So they produce different, substances in order to make plastics, which sort of form the basic compounds of plastics. So like bottles, toys, even like very things you wouldn't think of that have a sort of a nefarious or like a terrible background, like, like trays, like they used to carry food and things like that. There was this explosion, right? And I was reading the autopsy report of these just gruesome like details of what happened to these to two workers. Two workers actually died, and 30 others were hospitalized. And obviously there was like many concerned residents around the not immediate in the immediate area, because of what I understand, there's not many actual neighborhoods in the immediate area, but you still had some, local concern about what the dangers of that facility. So that's sort of a, yeah, that's one of the reasons I chose LyondellBasell specifically, is just because they had this incident happen this year. But it could have easily, honestly, been any a lot of other, refining companies in the in specifically in the Houston region. I mean, we have, we have one of these things happen like every few months or every year at least. And so this was more of not really trying to capture the entirety of this problem in Houston, but really just sort of narrow it to one specific instance of this broader problem, which is, the dangers of living with these facilities, right?
No. If you let me, can I quote that specific paragraph about the deaths in the podcast? If you're okay with that. So you wrote on July 27, 2021, the LyondellBasell acetyl facility located in La Porte released 100,000 pounds of acetic acid, killing two workers and sending 30 to the hospital, which I'm someone who watches the news constantly. It's not like reading newspapers. Like, I do read newspapers on my phone, not actual physical newspapers. But I was in Houston around the time. I listened to local news all the time, and I never heard of that incident. That's why I was kind of like surprised. That's like, oh my God, this actually happened, but I never heard of it. Which in a sense is like, why wasn't it a bigger issue? Because usually when something like that happens, maybe like, oh, the ocean is burning, or I remember there was a fire in Deer Park that killed chemical fire in Deer Park sometime last year too, that killed some people. It was a big news, but this particular one was just hush hush, and I you know, it made me wonder why, in a sense. Obviously you also put in the factor that money makes things disappear in a sense. But in I was reading through the article, and with LyondellBasell having that reputation, they also have a very weird reputation of greenwashing, for a plastic company to keep saying, oh yes, we're going to make sure the environment's not toxic. Like, in that sense, why, like, especially nowadays, why companies that even like oil, like you look at Exxon ads and you look at all these other ads of like oil companies saying, oh yes, we'll make sure that we go greenhouse will be reduced by 2050 or whatever they say. and they're really not reducing or making anything new. Like, what is the incentive to greenwash people into thinking they are environmentally friendly when obviously what they're making is not environmentally friendly?
Yeah, this is sort of a double-edged sword of, I think, of climate agreements, of really just emissions agreements, you know, that this 2050 number of, you know, this is the sort of threshold, this is the, you know, the either we, you know, reduce emissions by that point, or, you know, that's either that happens, or, you know, emissions, you know, they continue to rise, and climate change worsens, you know, irreversibly, right? And so 2050 is sort of that key moment that that we need to really focus on. And so that is a significant issue, you know, that's I think we're right to have that point. And that's why you sort of hear the number 2030 as well, is mm-hmm. because, you know, obviously we can't, if we wait until 2049 and then start to reduce, you know, they wouldn't reduce at 2050, right? So you have to start much earlier. You have to start like now, right? So so you have the 2030 sort of interim or intermediate goal. And so those are good goals to have, right? Like that's something we should be focusing on. But unfortunately, you know, companies will use that as a sort of, will use that time frames, those, you know, decades long time frames. You know, they can say whatever, you know, they can say that we're going to do that. And they can even point to some initiatives that they're doing, which, you know, they do show, but you know, they will, like, if you look at LyondellBasell's page, I think like right now it has their climate pledge, like on the front page, it has it like as the sort of like, you know, here's what we're doing, right? Even though, you know, we are this, you know, major, you know, oil user and petrochemical like company. So it's sort of a double-edged sword, because you want them to be doing that, but then again, they can also use that as a cover to really not do anything. And unfortunately, that requires a lot more, I guess, reading and more investigating, which is, I think, so you can, like, if you go to their page right now, you can see that they're doing, like, this specific company is doing all these initiatives, but what it doesn't tell you is the budget that they're allocating to these things. It doesn't tell you what share of, you know, how big these programs are going to be, you know, when you compare it to the rest of their operations, right? And so that's, you know, the public isn't going to be able to see that. And so that's almost a sort of failure on the part of, you know, journalists and media companies, because they don't point that out. You are starting to see that, though. Like, you are starting to see that, you know, hey, this is, you know, they're not being honest. They're not being, you know, they're not being honest about what they're saying about their initiatives. You know, they're saying they're doing this, but it's, you know, 0.5% of their budget is going to this, and they're not really focusing on it. So that's, and that, this is leaving aside, obviously, what I talk about in the article, which is the lobbying that they're doing, the sort of dark money that goes into trade industry groups, you know, basically these fronts that lobby, you know, the government, but you don't know that it's them, because, you know, they have, you know, obscure names like the American Progressive Bag Alliance or the Plastics Industry Association. And that requires you to even know what LyondellBasell does, you know, so it's sort of like I think for me, the more troubling issue is these sort of like dark groups that operate sort of covertly.
It gives this idea that, you know, if you more or less invest in what they're doing, you are helping the planet one way or another, because they're like, oh, you know what, I can do my part and be like, you know, recycle and do this and do that. But, like, you know, if I, like, maybe I get more petrol from Exxon, but Exxon is using my money for something good, that's putting my money into a bigger company that helps the issue, which, in fact, is not really helping the issue, in a sense. So it's kind of, like, deceiving to the public in general. But in a sense of, like, we are on topic of, you know, the climate and all these kind of things, I know Well, last time we spoke, you were doing research on the Green New Deal, and you read a lot about the Green New Deal, which a lot of people, yeah, it's come a huge political, point of, well, argument. So, like, in a more layman's language, in which people might understand, what is the Green New Deal? Like, people have a different idea of what the Green New Deal is. Like, oh, they're taking away our cows, like, to the extreme, which is like, no, they are not taking away anyone's cows. But like, to like, you have done intensive research on it. You've read a lot of stuff. You've like written a lot of stuff on it. So what is the Green New Deal in a simpler way?
Yeah. So I did, yeah. So you were mentioning, I did a research paper on the Green New Deal. I was looking at. So I'm a philosophy major. I don't know if I mentioned that at the beginning. So I was interested in. I mean, I'm obviously interested in sustainability issues, but I was sort of trying to, come at the environmental sustainability issue from a more philosophical viewpoint. And so I wanted to look at, okay, there's this thing, as you said, the Green New Deal, which is very, there's a lot of heated debate around it. There's, you know, various viewpoints. And so I wanted to say, okay, well, you know, this group of people is saying this, and this group of people is saying this, you know, which one of them is right? You know, is it, as you mentioned with the cow thing, is again a sort of, weaken our freedoms, I guess, as Americans. And so I was like, and that word did get thrown around a lot. If you look at debates, if you look at and people who advocate for a Green New Deal, you hear freedom and liberty a lot. And so I was thinking, okay, well, let's focus on that and, you know, think about what does it actually mean for things like freedom, right? And so that was the sort of the impetus of writing that. But the Green New Deal itself is sort of, as I mentioned, or as I found writing the paper is it's a policy framework. So a lot of people think that once, you know, I forget the actual number now, but it was a House resolution and a Senate resolution. And so these were meant not as bills. So if the president signed it into law, you know, it wouldn't become, you know, we wouldn't just all of a sudden like have all of these things happening. It's more of an agreement within the, so because it's a resolution, it's sort of an agreement amongst the, which if you understand sort of legislatively what that means is it's sort of, yeah, it's an agreement between themselves, between the houses, and I guess, broadly speaking, an agreement of the country that we are committed to doing this. And if you look at the resolution itself, it outlines a number of projects, goals. And so I mentioned the 2050, 2030 stuff earlier. One of the things in the Green New Deal is that it reduces emissions by 2050, and then it has a goal of 2030, which are in line with, you know, a lot of scientific research. And it's probably for this reason alone is why I call it the most comprehensive and sort of science-based policy that we have at the moment. And so it's a policy framework. So it has a number of projects. It has like a job guarantee, which is a federal job guarantee, which is sort of built around the original. And I should mention too that the Green New Deal is obviously molded and shaped with inspiration from the original New Deal, right? So the one led by Franklin D. Roosevelt in the middle of the 20th century, sort of as a response to the Great Depression and also World War II. So it's sort of this, it's equal parts, I guess, and I'm speaking here of the New Deal and the Green New Deal, is equal parts, you know, recovery, but also, you know, these, we needed to give people, you know, like a job, we needed to give them, you know, security, right? And so, the Green New Deal emphasizes a little bit more social justice issues. So it actually says, you know, it actually, like, for example, details how, communities, vulnerable communities like children, the elderly, but also minorities have historically faced, you know, disproportionately faced environmental harms. And so it specifically addresses that. And so in that sense, it's a little bit different from the New Deal. But they're both fundamentally like the same. They're trying to, give security to people, but also face the threat of their times. So back then it was the Depression and it was World War II, but for us it's the climate crisis, environmental, you know, crisis. So that's sort of a nutshell. So it's, I guess, like, what I want to stress is that it's a framework, right? It's it's sort of it's a number of projects, and it sort of says, like, you know, there's nothing that's not on the table, right? That we're willing to try anything, basically, to confront the climate problem, which is, I think, a strength too, right? Because not only is it a sort of democratic, you know, policy instrument in that sense, but it's also it sort of fosters experimentation and trial and error, which is, I think, I don't know, it seems to me the right approach.
I have already read some bits of it. I haven't really gone deep into it because, like, I love reading involved in it. But I see it as good for the country, but, like, a lot of the people I know who are against it, who are educated, you know, you have to kind of, like, separate that in that sense. Who have read it, educated not to read it, they are worried about the money that it would take for it to be passed or something like that. Like, you know, will it indebt the country and affect the children of the future or whatever? But, like, you point out that it's a framework, not really, like, in a sense of, like, you know, once it's passed, it's, like, straight up going into that. Mm-hmm. Kind of, like, brings light into the fact that that should not even be a concern in the first place, because it's just, like, a frame of a house that is not still, like, yet to be planned, really. So, in that sense, yes. But in my next question, which is, like, I don't really know, I'm kind of, like, bringing more mainstream climate stuff here. But, like, the whole idea of, like, having people, in a sense, be the face of climate change right now is Greta Thunberg and all those other people. What are your thoughts on that? Like, having, because you have done your own research and you have gone into that deeply and you have done the, like, main load of that, but then these people are, like, really, like, the face, you know, which it's not really a problem that they're younger in any sense, but, like, having a face of climate change, what are your thoughts on that?
Man, this is such a good conversation, yeah, like, rather a good question to have a conversation about, because let me just start by saying that, like, I don't know, we didn't mention this, but I was in the Sunrise Movement. So this is a environmental group, youth-led environmental group that really championed the Green New Deal for the most part. And I was a part of that for the maybe the first two-thirds of 2021, and then I left. And so when I was saying that back at the beginning that I was sort of kind of reflecting about the environmental movement and the environmental issues that we have, a big question was something like this, was something like, you know, is having these, like, you know, models, or even like, not even at the global scale, there's obviously, Greta, but, you know, nationally we have, I think, AOC, which has sort of become our model. But you also have maybe worship is, like, the wrong word, but they've become, like, idols almost. And you even have that, you know, sort of starting to happen locally, so regionally, you know, at the state level, not obviously well known as the other names, but you sort of have that everyone sort of putting their trust in this one person and this having them sort of be the leader of this movement. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe all of that's wrong, but that's sort of my sense of it right now, is that, and this isn't, like, a predominant thing, but it is a sort of weird phenomenon that's happening within the environmental movement, which, and I'm saying, like, it's happening, but then again, I don't know how old this sort of phenomena is, or if it's just sort of, we as humans like to do that. Like, we have to have, like, a model or an idol or a sort of leader behind whatever cause we have. And obviously you can think of, you know, during the civil rights movement, they probably had this same conversation, right? In America specifically, you know, there was the sort of feud between MLK and Malcolm X, and So I feel like this is an issue we have today. And so I'm saying it's an issue because I think all of the leaders in the environmental movement don't all share the same views, right? So they don't agree on certain questions. They like to emphasize different things. So yeah, you're gonna, so there's not just the idea that we have, you know, these sort of idols or leaders for the for these movement for the like different segments of the movement, but also that they're sort of in disagreement at times. But yeah, I don't know if I have any real like, I don't know if it's bad or not yet. Because I think on some level it is, I will say, and I think a lot of people who are probably listening have already encountered something like this where they find someone, they will find that someone has like sort of criticized a person and in effect criticized the entire movement because of that. And so that's, I think, what's dangerous about that is because, you know, putting all of your, having someone sort of lead a movement or a group or an issue, like let's say it's not even, you know, climate change, it's just, you know, one sort of issue in the environmental movement. Let's say there's plastic recycling. Once you criticize that person, then the whole thing sort of becomes undermined and it loses its, you know, I don't know what the word is, but like its credentials, right? Like, and so as soon as you find fault with that person, you know, it's, and like I'm saying, like, so this is obviously happening with like AOC. If you look at any of the news of like mainstream news, like New York Times, not even just like CNN or whatever, but like actual newspapers, you know, one criticism and it sort of spirals into this, why are we even listening to this, you know, this person, but also the movement. And they sort of start criticizing other people around that person. It's so it's, I don't know. That's why I think, I mean, if I guess if I were to come down on a position, it would be that we shouldn't just have one person. We should have a lot of people, at every level and at a different, on different issues, right? But I don't know. It's a good question. I think, I mean, if I had to choose between having them and not having them, I would choose rather to have them and to have these, you know, these people here. But it's a, it's, I wish, I'll say this, I wish it was more of a, I wish it had more of a self-reflective quality to it because I feel like there's not that, like there's not sort of a self-reflective component to the environmental movement when it comes to this specific question. Like they, like I feel like to even question the people that are sort of leading this movement right now isn't a thing that's happening as much as I would like it to be. But yeah.
I mean, it seems like there are obviously pros and cons like everything. The whole idea of like having that person be the face of it, brings it into a bigger light and brings people to know more about it. But at the same time, you know, it's one person, and obviously, as humans, we make mistakes in like even if like we have a bigger ideology, like in that ideology, we like make mistakes in like pushing it through, like, you know, some things we say and then the actions we do might contradict sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, and then everyone's like, oh, and this is what you're doing, and then the whole thing falls apart. That's like, you know, you pointed out AOC, and you know, those kind of
And
things.
specifically for her, it was the what the reason it's important for her is because she was sort of the champion for the Green New Deal when it came out. And so the sort of blunders she had in the release of the resolution, and then later things which people just wanted to attack her for which, you know, that have no real sort of like support behind them, so they're just, you know, they're not actual criticisms, which I think you can find a lot of unfortunately, but yeah, so that, you know, when she messes up, then it sort of it gets thrown onto the Green New Deal, which is itself a very good, you know, idea that I think we should be supporting, but it's also, yeah, and yeah, that's, and it's sort of, it's also sort of disingenuous to do that because, you know, she didn't come up with the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is the work of, decades, and even maybe since the first New Deal, right? It goes back to, movements at the early 20th century, the 1900s, championing all these different issues. And various groups, right? I think this problem, they had it during the New Deal too, right? Like FDR didn't come up with the New Deal. It was sort of a confluence of various factions, political organizations that sort of created that. But anyway, that's another problem.
It's like so much to think about in terms of like climate, I think people are like, if I just do this one thing, the whole thing will be saved, which is not actually how it's going to be. But you are doing something amazing. Like, apart from doing that, this is like a dark question. You're vegan, which to me is like,
oh, yeah,
a messiah thing, because I cannot be vegan to save my life. But you are vegan, and your choice to be vegan, I'm guessing, is environmental. Reason.
Yeah, so let me keep this short, because like this is like a life sort of question for me, because like I went vegan maybe like 5 years ago. It must have been like at least 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I decided actually to go vegan because it was sort of like a nutritional reason, or more of like a health reason. So I was like fresh out of like high school, and I was like, I want to be healthy, right? Like, I want to be like, I want to look good, I want to be strong and everything else, right? I was heavily influenced by specifically like my uncle and like my uncles, really, who themselves sort of like really liked, were into nutrition and, working out and things like that. So things like very things that I think, a high schooler would be very, reactive to or whatever. But that's the reason, right? Like, that was the initial reason. I was like, I want to, what's the best diet for me and things like that. So like, I wanted to be healthy, right? And so for me, it was like doing whatever sort of research, I guess, a high schooler does, I fell onto veganism, right? But then I started researching actual, like scientific articles, right? Like articles in Nature and things you would see on like Science Direct and like all of these other like reputable, I guess like journals. I started encountering more of like the fact that veganism is actually really, would be effective solution for the climate issue. And that was sort of my introduction into climate change and like environmentalism broadly, because veganism, aside from the sort of ethical reasons of killing animals, aside from, as I mentioned, the health sort of reason that people do it for, because it promotes a healthy diet whenever you do it right, I guess, because it's based off of like whole foods, nuts, grains, beans, etc., which are, research shows that improves your longevity in the long term. So aside from those things, there was the environmental issue, which is, and the reason it's an environmental issue is because the way we produce food for ourselves, specifically beef, and, animals and things like that, that they're heavily intensive, not just environmentally, but also they produce, emissions, and they act, they cause like climate change alongside, transportation emissions, electricity use, and other sources. They're alongside other sources of emissions, is what I'm saying, I guess. But, and so that's become one of the main reasons for me, is just, I have a chance every day to sit down and not be a part of that problem. And so that's why I do it. but I should say that when I started vegan, I thought that was the solution. I thought that was all I needed to do. And I've met a lot of other people too who are vegan and who are in the movement, in the environmental movement now, or say they are like an environmental activist, who started that sort of same trajectory as I did.
Like, much power to you. I have watched so many documentaries about it, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I will not eat meat anymore. And then like 3 hours later, I'm eating like a bacon and egg sandwich, which is fat, but like, I'm sorry. I will apologize to all the animals I've killed and because of my food taste, but like, I have tried and I wish I could do better in that sense. Because I remember taking like an environmental science class and they were like, based on your lifestyle, how many earths will you need? We had that quiz. And, you know, generally, I do take public transportation, which is something I'm very, very big into. But because of my meat eating, they said, oh, yes, you need, like, 3 earths because of your meat consumption. I'm like, 3 earths? We only have one. How am I? I mean, just me in this case. So it's something like, you know, obviously, like, and some people take some time. And also, me, I eat meat because of other cultural reasons, because almost all the food in my country it's made with some meat or some meat product, something. So for cultural reasons, I cannot even like be vegan. I've tried seeing menus of Nigerian food that's vegan. Like go to Nigerian restaurant and be like, oh yeah, I'm vegan. And they look at you like, so what do you want in the menu? It's just, like, and there's literally like, almost nothing that isn't made out of some sort of meat or something like that. So I don't know, like, in a sense of like, you know, we also asked, because I had this whole argument with somebody who was like trying to force me to be vegan, and I was like, you know what, I will try. But like, here's the issue, a lot of, you know what, the idea of third world country or whatever they call them, a lot of them, even though like some of them do have, you know, in terms of high vegetable consumption, a lot of them rely on meat for their food, in a sense. And also, like, you know, some people use that to justify the whale killings that happen in Faroe Island, because that's their only source of meat intake or something like that, because they don't really have farm animals to farm in the very cold place. But, you know, the whole thing about, like, consumption in terms of, like, survival or whatever, I don't know. I have no idea, because, you know, in some parts of the world, they think, like, the whole idea of being vegan is a luxury, in its sense. So it's like,
you know, and some people even say that it's like, it's sort of unnatural to be vegan. Like, there's I've gone down all of these arguments. Like, that argument is also interesting too, right? Like, that, you know, when humans evolved, right, like, they didn't do it by eating, you know, plants. They did it by a sort of mixture of different foods, including meat, which sort of, they make the argument that, you know, helped us like develop our brains and like helped us develop. And so there's that argument too, right? Like, there's the argument that even if we should be vegan environmentally, it's not, you know, it's not healthy, I guess. It's not in line with what we are as humans, I guess. I find all of these interesting. I wouldn't say that I disagree or agree specifically. I think it's more so for me, it's, I think you can't deny in this conversation, I think one thing you can't deny is how terrible the way we use the land across the planet to make animal based foods. I think there's no denying that is a significant issue. I mean, the fact that, you know, that the Amazon, you know, is in flames like every summer or every year, which is an issue, because that's actually the rainforest there is actually it's sort of hard to explain, but it regulates the global system, right? And so it's integral into that. And the reason it's burning is because of, you know, meat consumption, because they need to clear the land to put animals there. And so I think wherever you stand, I think that is a fact that you have to sort of either be at peace with or, you know, change to, and whatever that means for you, right? And I don't think that you should, like, I don't know. At first I looked at people who ate meat as like down on them. Like, I was like, I don't want anything to do with you. Like, I was at that age where, I was very like zealous, right? Like, I was I don't know, like, but I'm not like that anymore, and I think it's awful when there are when that is your sort of encounter with someone who is vegan. But I don't know. My sense is that there's not too many of those people. And if they are, they're probably like celebrity vegans who get paid to sort of be angry, and be these I don't know, these to be that sort of stereotypical model. But yeah, I totally get like all of the cultural reasons and all of the and I also like too, I don't know if this is what you were mentioning, but like there are different parts of the world who sort of who have to survive, off of meat consumption rate, and they have to survive. Maybe not, it's not, beef or whatever, but they survive by, killing certain animals. And I'm not talking about like cities or anything. I'm talking about like villages or small groups of people who actually live off of the land. And, they do so in a way that's, I guess, not harmful to the environment. And I think that's sort of where I'm at in the veganism conversation is, I don't think everyone should be vegan, but I think we should be sort of going to that sort of place of balance to where we learn to sort of to eat, right? to eat in a balanced way, right? And yeah, I don't know. It's I think if you ask me, and I think this is fortunately this is what would help actually, the climate issue is if everyone just reduced their intake of meat a little bit. So I think like a really good quote that I saw was that not everyone needs to be vegan, but everyone should, reduce their meat consumption basically. So that's sort of where I'm at, is just sort of finding that balance. And again, that can look different for everyone. That can mean becoming vegan, becoming an environmentalist, or like specifically like actively calling for policy changes to land use and things like that. Yeah, that's sort of where I'm at. But it's a yeah, it's hard to talk about because of the sort of what people usually come across like in newspapers and like media companies. Like you only get when you read the news, you only get those like very polarized accounts of the two. And there's no real, like, there's not a, you don't read in the paper like, oh, these, there was a very nuanced discussion about veganism and here are all the policy things that we can do. I don't know. It's tough, yeah.
I literally lost a friendship because of it, because my friend turned
Wow.
vegan and then you saw that they were like, when a person is beaten by a vampire in the instant, all they want is blood at that moment. So the person turned vegan, is like a new vegan person, and tried to force every single person to turn vegan. And I was like, sir, I would try, but I would know myself well enough to like know that I eat a lot of meat. Not of meat, but like meat products and everything. So like I love chicken. Chicken, I love them. Not live chicken though, like I'm scared of chickens. But like maybe dead chickens, I eat them. But like and then they were like so pissed and yelled at me and all these kind of things, and then they flood my phone with vegan information, all these kind of things. Actually, I don't know if there was a vegan, well, how they have faces in the movement. There was this one guy who was a huge thing in the vegan world or something like that. I don't know. But like I just did not understand, because it's like, I totally understand you're vegan. It's amazing you're vegan, but like I never force you to eat meat. No, I never come to your house and be like, oh, here is a burger, you must eat it. That's literally what you're doing to me. You're trying to like force me to eat m not eat meat, which is like I totally get it for the environment, because I think that time that's when Netflix brought out the whole cow film. I've forgotten the name, but it was this
I think
film.
it's like a famous one. I think it's Cowspiracy.
Cowspiracy, I think so.
Yeah.
So, or Food Inc. Because one of those,
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
yeah, one of those documentaries, and they watched it, and that's what changed their life. I've watched it, not gonna
Yeah.
lie, I've watched it many times. I'm like, oh my god, so sad. And then look at chicken and I'm crying while I'm eating it. But they were so, like, after that, they just did not become friends anymore. And I was like, okay, sorry. I mean, I'm sorry, but I just could not do that. And then they blocked me and I was like, cool. But also, in a sense of like, for you as a someone who's vegan, the whole push with PR or the industry of PR, what do you think about that? Because that's another group that I am not sure in terms of their ethics and everything, because there's so many, you know, it's always divided into two. You're either for them or against them, and there's no, like you said, nuanced conversation happening. Like, you know,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like also like with you can sort of apply this to the environmental movement too, right? Like, so there's this sort of, I wouldn't say I don't know if extreme is the right word, but like there, yeah, they can be, I guess, or there's this radical extreme segment, you know, of this movement, right? And so I guess my thoughts on it are, you know, it's an approach to change, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's the best one, because, and this is sort of going back to a little bit of what you were saying about your friend, is that I used to be like, I mean, I don't know if I would lose a friend over it, but I used to be, you know, very like, you know, either, you know, I would look down on people who didn't, you know, who didn't eat the way I did, or who didn't at least entertain the idea of eating vegan. And I held that sort of belief, that attitude for a while. But I realized that, you know, that's not conducive to change. And that's not what I'm doing then is something entirely different from what I wanted to do, which was, you know, help, you know, the world, help people. So I think, and this is sort of weird to think about, but, there's a really great essay or speech, I guess, that was given by Lincoln. And a lot of people don't know he was a part of the temperance movement. So the temperance movement advocated for not drinking. And so this, he gave this address, and he goes into detail about how you should get people to change their personal habits. And I think one of the very inspiring things that I still sort of believe in today is that, you know, you need to first establish with people, whatever it is your cause is, you know, you need to establish that you're their friends, right? That you have their best interests in mind. And so that's sort of been my approach to getting people to become vegan, to change, I guess, mm-hmm. is, you know, appealing to different things, which they do. So like, yeah, like sort of going back to the healthy thing, like, if I knew someone was trying to be healthy, I would say, hey, you should try this out, because it's actually, you know, there's research that shows, and this is not my, you know, computer research. This is like done by the major nutritional associations, you know, even the United Nations has different programs advocating for veganism. And so I would show them this, and I'm like, if you want to be healthy, you know, check this out. Then, you know, and sort of take that sort of approach. And so I think you should just the right approach to go back to PETA, the right approach isn't to you know, take a stand and, you know, forget everyone else and sort of do your own approach. I think you need to ensure that at the very least you have other people understand that you have the best interest in mind, that when whatever you're doing, and I don't know if that comes across with the sort of campaigns that PETA does. I know certainly that whenever I see one of their ads or one of their graphics, that it wouldn't make me change. You know, it just sort of has like a weird shock, almost like shock pornography, right? Like if you look at the stuff they put out, like of actually like mutilated animals and things like that, you know, that will help some people change, but I don't know if it will help everyone or even anyone entertain the idea of veganism.
Okay. So to kind of end this on a very light note, what's your go-to food as someone, because I want
oh go-to
to
food
because I want to know what to eat.
I think I will at least, so my go-to food is curry, so like garbanzo beans, like curry based. Usually, sometimes I do curry. Sometimes I use like garam masala and things like that. So like those sorts of dishes. So like bean, I guess, based dishes are my go-to. That's probably the best one. I eat that like at least like three or four times out of the week.
And what's your go-to restaurant of maybe food outside of your house you eat?
I'll give you a fast food one because I think that would be most accessible. If you've ever not eaten at Chipotle, you should eat Chipotle because it's very good. Like if you want to be I guess not healthy, I guess is the right word, but just sort of, I mean they have like meat options, I guess, but it's very good if you're vegan or if you want to, try that out. They have like tofu based sort of chorizo, I think.
Yeah,
They
the
also have, yeah, they have other stuff that's coming out that's plant-based, but they're really good if you're interested. I eat that like maybe every week. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much, Marco, for coming on this. I learned so much today, and hopefully I actually implant that in my life. I hope like people who listen actually implant it into their life, so if they have the willpower to do that. Thank you so much. Do you have any last words to say for the people?
No, I think that was good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
I'm sort of sad we didn't get to talk about movies, but
I mean, okay, so the thing about this podcast is I can come back anytime. It's not
yeah,
a thing. Like most of the guests I have,
for
they
sure.
repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat, and it's like we talk about several things. So like yes, we can talk about movies for sure. So I'm looking forward to that because I'm so excited about that. But yeah, have a great day and goodbye.